Rewind is a production of Wisconsin Eye. To keep programs like this free and accessible to all, please consider a charitable gift to wiseye.org/donate or text WISEYE to 44321. This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind, Your Week in Review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, Your Week in Review, the man in charge of Wisconsin's election review will face a $2,000 fine per day until he complies with a court order. Will taxpayers have to foot the bill, and what additional punishments he could face? Plus, Republicans are holding a variety of election integrity events focused on recruiting poll workers ahead of the August primary. And we have the latest on the ongoing gun control debate. All this and more on Rewind, Your Week in Review for June 17th.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
J.R., we're going to pick up on a topic that we talked about last week. It was a very busy news week last week, and it's in regards to Michael Gableman. Mm-hmm. He had a very tense court appearance in Dane County last Friday, and the judge, after some of those testy exchanges, issued some sanctions against Gableman. Gableman was found in contempt of court on Friday, but now we know a little bit more about the fines that he'll have to pay until he starts complying with the court order. So he'll be fined $2,000 a day until he starts maintaining records requested for his election review. Now, Gableman could face additional punishment, basically for his behavior. He was caught on a live microphone during a recess where he mocked Dane County Circuit Court Judge Frank Remington and made snide remarks about American Oversight attorney Krista Westerberg. Now, American Oversight, of course, has three pending lawsuits seeking records about Gableman's probe. Some of those have been deleted. And during this tense exchange, basically now the judge is recommending to state officials that they maybe look at other disciplinary action for his comments made in court.
I talked to a few lawyers this week. They told me that lawyers know not to act that way in a courtroom. Now, Gableman is a former Supreme Court justice, former Supreme Court judge. He made some comments in the court about how he ran his courtroom. There was a feeling from people I talked to this week that there was a certain arrogance on Gableman's part, almost a contempt for Judge Remington in the court proceedings, that this was beneath him, that he, former Supreme Court justice, former judge, he knows how things go. This is totally unfair. Part of what grated on Gableman was during the hearings last week, Remington asked a question, okay, we're talking about, I think it's like 70 or 90 records that weren't turned over than they should have been, that's the issue, right? And part of the defense has been from the Gableman's team as well, this one aide, there was an issue there with him turning it over. The judge said, well, look, if you're going to pin it on this kid, I'm showing my age,
right.
This younger aide, yes. I should say, then maybe he should have representation because his interests may diverge from Gableman's because one of the penalties for contempt is jail time. So Gableman gets on the stand saying, I'm not going to be railroaded. You're bringing up jail, gave these speeches, et cetera, et cetera. Look, the bottom line politically is this is one more bad headline. One more negative story out of this ongoing probe, which was supposed to wrap up, remember, in October of 2021. It is now mid-June of 2022 with no end in sight, and it continues to cause issues for some Republicans because they opened the door to this, and the door's going to be closed for a while because, as we know, in one of the many lawsuits floating around about this thing, we have a hearing on August 30th. So it's going to go on for a while. Now the questions are, will Gableman get back in the good graces of Judge Remington by proving he's in compliance with the order to turn the records over? How much will the fines be? How are they going to be imposed? Is he going to cut a check like once a week, once a month? Like, what's going to go on?
Right.
There are a lot of questions like that I'm trying to find out to see how this plays out.
And Gableman, after that court appearance, too, some reporters talked to him, and he basically defended why he's missing some records, why he deleted these, is that I don't have to keep every piece of paper, saying, in quote, I would need a warehouse if I would have to keep everything, every little scrap piece of paper, post-it note, what would it have be. But it is a taxpayer-funded review is kind of the argument. You are being paid, and you should maintain records. records. That's what a lot of people are arguing in court. And the judges, Judge Remington, had really a scathing order. I'm going to read a little bit part of it. And quote, the judge said, "The circus Gableman created in the courtroom destroyed any sense of decorum and irreparably damaged the public's perception of the judicial process." There was also a footnote in there, JR, that you and I both caught, that Judge Remington started getting some threats after this court appearance because Gableman suggested that he was a partisan judge. So he said, in quote, "Unfortunately, the court has observed firsthand the effect of Gableman's unfounded accusation that I'm biased and that I'm an advocate for American oversight. I've been aware of threats. For example, I had a better watch my back, and I hope the judge has a gun." So really just troubling, I guess, aftermath from this court appearance. And we've even talked before about the pressure that judges are now under and the threats made against them and, you know, needed more protections. I believe it was the federal government just passed a bill that would remove Supreme Court justices' addresses online to make it more difficult to find out where they live. We've seen after the leaked Supreme Court opinion, after that over suggesting Roe would be overturned, that there was a lot of protests out of justice houses. So it just seems like we're in a different era than we've ever been when it comes to security concerns.
Remington made a reference to an online threat to protest at his home. They don't specify where these other threats came from. Our assumption would be they were online as well. That seems to be one of the many wonderful things about the internet, is that people can say whatever they want without penalty sometimes. But we're not sure how serious this is. But in light of what happened with that judge kind of in western Wisconsin recently, you have to take everything seriously. I mean, this is a tense time for people in general, but especially the judicial system. There are protests outside Kavanaugh's home, that unfortunate incident there. Now this, it what Remington also got it to was this is particularly troubling because Gableman is a court official. He's a member of the bar. He's a former Supreme Court justice and a judge, and he's the one bringing this down upon the judicial system. It's your responsibility, if you're part of the court system, to uphold some sense of respect for it. And Gableman did not do that, in his words.
I spoke to UW-Madison political science professor Barry Burden about basically Gableman's behavior, whether taxpayers will have to foot the bill. And he also said it was, quote, astonishing that a former Supreme Court justice would display such disregard for proper legal behavior and decorum in the courtroom. Now, I also just kind of mentioned, I talked to Barry Burden about, will taxpayers have to foot the bill? That's a big question, right, JR? And it seems likely that we will.
So I am not a lawyer. I often see the show. I read a lot of contracts, though, and there's this provision in the latest amendment that Voss signed with Gableman in April that said they will indemnify and hold harmless Gableman for whatever kind of he does in his official duties. Now, I don't know if contempt counts as part of your duties, but there are other provisions in those contracts that make clear the assembly is the one who'll take responsibility for what's going on out of this probe. So now my question is, how are these checks going to be cut? Who's going to cut them? Like, what will this come out of Gableman's original budget? So as of last Friday, some chief clerk told me he'd Gableman spent $495,000 in change out of $676,000, which is total budget. Do these fines come out of that? Robin Voss said at one point the legal bills are not going to count toward that budget. Well, I've got more bills that I'm pulling together that we're getting awfully close to $1 million right now. Will that be part of that? That just doesn't count toward the tally, but it goes in that legal bill pot. We have three open records lawsuits filed by American Oversight. We have the lawsuit Josh Call filed seeking to force Gableman to interview these witnesses in public before a committee, not in private for deposition. And we have the Gableman-initiated effort to jail the mayors of Green Bay, Racine, Madison, and some city officials if they won't provide private depositions at his private office. So it is getting expensive for taxpayers. It is adding up. And this is one more piece of that bill that we don't know what's going to end up being.
And it's next week that Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, American Oversight, has also filed a lawsuit against him seeking records on his phone and emails that were deleted. And he will have to provide some type of reasoning why that happened and why those can't be found ever again on those servers.
We don't know, are we headed to appeals with these orders? Because that's an option. But if you appeal, you're also going to incur legal costs, which means more expenses for taxpayers for a probe that was supposed to be over in October of last year.
Right, and I think we know what we've talked about on the show before is that Republicans, Voss, Gableman, they keep arguing that they can't complete this investigation because they're so buried in these legal battles. But Right now, the election investigation is supposed to be, in a sense, on pause while Gableman finishes this legal work. And if that's the case, I mean, we have these court hearings that are being booked. I think there's one even in September. So it is almost, I could say, 99% sure that this election investigation will stretch well into 2023. Mm-hmm. Also, this week, there was several events hosted by Republicans, basically called election integrity conferences, trying to recruit poll workers and also trying to recruit and train people. Now, of course, a lot of Republicans were upset of what happened in the 2020 election. They have a lot of unfounded claims of people, you know, stuffing ballots into absentee ballot envelope or drop boxes, excuse me, I couldn't come to my words. So they're kind of having a lot of these efforts just to get more people on the grounds. The Republican National Convention also hosted an election integrity tour, is going on throughout Wisconsin to do about the same thing. So it's not a big surprise because they want to also be in the room when these elections are going on.
So this effort's been underway for a while to recruit more poll workers. You had to turn in by, I think it's November, December of last year, your list, if you're the political parties, of people you wanted to be considered to work at the polls. And then the clerks must take from that list. You can keep adding people, but they don't have to consider them necessarily if they get those folks in. The question is, and Democrats are raising this concern of, okay, if you're bringing in partisans to be poll workers, like you walk in the door and say, here's my ID, I signed the poll book. If you're a partisan, you can challenge, you know, will those people challenge me and say, well, you're not James R. Ross. I want to challenge that you're really who you say you are. Mm-hmm. Or your signature doesn't match what I think is in the poll book. It's not right. You're like, this is not, it doesn't match your ID. Will that happen? You have to be a resident of the county you live in to be a poll worker. So you're not going to see people from Waukesha going to Milwaukee, for example, to work the polls. But Republicans are bringing more people in. To them, this is extra eyes in the process to ensure things are going the way they're supposed to. To Democrats, it is the worry of what havoc can you cause? Because even if a challenge is frivolous and shot down right away, the longer a line you create, the longer people wait in line, the more likely is they'll leave the line and not vote because they're frustrated. And there's this worry about chaos at the polls. It's going to be an intense election this fall. We'll see if any of these fears are founded or if this is all going to go smoothly. We're not getting any problems.
We'll see. also this week, Governor Evers' administration kind of got a little bit of a victory, I guess, when it comes to regulations around PFAS. Now, those are what are called forever chemicals that don't break down in nature, such as cookware, firefighting foam, and it could be linked to several health problems for humans and animals. Now, Republican lawmakers on the Joint Committee for Review and Administrative Rules did not object to Evers' regulations that will allow the DNR to implement them. Tony Wilkin Gibbert, the executive director from the environmental law firm Midwest Environmental Advocates, kind of called this a victory. And while he's glad to see these rules move forward, he says that he's mindful that Wisconsinites whose water comes from private wells also deserves the same protections under a state's groundwater law. We also had Deborah Shore, the regional director of the EPA, speak at an event on Marquette University this week, talking about those recommendations for PFAS. Let's first take a listen, and then we'll talk more about this.
Just this morning, headquarters, Office of Water, made an announcement of a new interim health advisory for four of the chemicals that are part of this large suite that we refer to as PFAS that includes numerous chemicals. This is not regulatory, not an enforcement measure, but a health advisory that lowers the levels that we think are protective of human health by orders of magnitude more than we've seen before. It's taking time, it's true, but science takes time. And we're issuing this new health advisory today because the science has changed. We've learned a lot more since the last health advisory was issued in 2016. We're on a path to, by the end of this year, have some new proposals for regulations that may go into rulemaking in 2023.
Dare, some of the communities that are really struggling with high levels of PFAS right now, Marinette, Madison, Marshfield, Wausau, a lot of those areas are being impacted right now, but The big problem, I think, right now is that in order to fix this, costs a whole lot of money. Yeah. And that is why WMC is pretty much opposed to these new regulations.
So part of this goes back, actually, 2019. Evers administration has been working on these rules since then. In February, the board approved these rules for surface water and some other stuff, did not do the drinking water, the wells, essentially. Those had to be reviewed by JCRAR, so they're okay with it. However, they're going to say, we're going to watch how you implement these rules. If we feel you go afoul of that, we're going to step in. There are also now critics saying this is not stringent enough because the feds have now made new recommendations. So this 70 parts per trillion, the main piece of this, that files an EPA recommendation from 2016, I believe. There are new recommendations out just this week that ratchet it down dramatically, well below what we're at right now. There are also questions of if anybody could reach that level, like if that's even like a level you can test for right now. But the concern from some is that, okay, it costs a lot to do this, and we only have pockets. Right now, if you're one of those pockets, it matters a lot to you.
Right.
But if you're not one of those pockets, why should you have the same stringent standards when you're not having an issue? You could argue that we just haven't found it yet. That said, it's hard when I've talked to you about this issue. If you're in Marinette, it is easy to get attention to people in Marinette about what's going on because there's a real fear about what's happening with groundwater. But if you're not in an affected area, lawmakers are somewhat kind of not really into it because they're saying, hey, there's some significant cost for my community for something that's not a problem for us. What's going on?
And we'll just kind of have to wait and see how these levels, you know, if they skyrocket in the next few years. It's really just a lot of these unknowns. I also learned, too, that even if you use a Brita, that does not get rid of the PFAS in your water. So maybe people just start, you know, going straight to water bottles. I mean, who knows? But it can cause some very serious health concerns for individuals and especially in children. So it's definitely a big issue here in Wisconsin. But like you said, maybe not everywhere. Might not resonate for you if you don't live in one of those affected areas. Also, I think this debate is not going to be going anywhere soon. The gun control debate this week, the Wisconsin Department of Justice announced the Office of School Safety started beginning training for critical incidents that happen in schools. Now, those can range from a wide variety of things, such as threats, active violence, national disasters, serious injuries. But this, of course, training is happening in wake of a slew of mass shootings across America, also shootings in schools. Attorney General Josh Call said we must take a comprehensive approach to school safety by creating this office. So this is, again, to just renewing the debate around how to keep schools safe. We've heard some ideas in Wisconsin being floated about arming teachers. We've seen on the national level, Congress reached this bipartisan agreement between 10 Republicans and 10 senators, kind of this framework to increase school safety grants, mental health services, and give incentives to states if they implement red flag laws that would take, which would basically allow someone to petition in court to allow a judge to take temporarily take a gun away from someone if they deem a threat to themselves or others. So kind of just another step, I guess, Wisconsin's taking here.
Well, those talks broke down yesterday. John Cornyn from Texas said he was done. Now, I don't know if that's meant for the weekend or if he was done. We're waiting to see how it goes. Yeah. Worth noting, Tammy Baldwin, Democrat from Madison, said she was on board with the framework she saw earlier this week. Ron Johnson, Oshkosh Republican, has said he's going to wait and see the actual language of the bill before he comments. But the latest developments aren't a great sign for things. They can pull it. They can get it back, right the ship, but wait and see what's going to happen out in D.C.
And we did hear from Leader Mitch McConnell's signal some support for the package, which could be a very significant step if he can get some other Republicans on board, because in a 50-50 Senate, basically, you need about 60 votes to get anything done. And I also did speak to Senator Baldwin. Basically, she called the package not perfect, but progress, right? It is a step forward. Then let's get to stock picks this week, JR. On Rising, you got Don Millis and
Pat Strakota.
Thank you.
So we talked about Don a little bit last week.
Yes.
Pat elected Ethics Commission Chair on Wednesday with no debate and no dissent.
Yeah.
It was very smooth. Part of that's because with the Ethics Commission, it does everything, almost everything behind closed doors. Everything is in closed session. You don't see any drama, any fallout, anything like that, unlike the Elections Commission, where this function's on full display. I wanted to kind of go back and talk more about Don Millis and the appointment, because we only touched on it last week a little bit. It just happened.
Right.
Just got elected chair. started getting feedback yet from people. And one thing I heard was high marks for him from both Democrats and Republicans as kind of a steady hand, somebody who knows this stuff. He served on the old elections board, which predated the Government Accountability Board, was on the Elections Commission when it first was created, appointed by then Senator William Scott Fitzgerald in 2017, I think it was?
2016.
Thank you. So he's been around. He also is somebody who's not a bomb thrower. And that was important with people I talked to because the two options for chair were him or Bob Spindell. And Robin Voss, Assembly Speaker, in appointing Don knew Don was going to become chair. Because even though Bob wanted to become chair, the reality was Bob could not get that coveted fourth vote on the commission to be elected chair because he was one of the false electors. That whole thing about President Trump and trying to keep his options alive, they say, others say trying to fraud the federal government about who really won Wisconsin. He's clashed with Democrats constantly on the commission. So Robin knew whoever he appointed was on a path to becoming chair. He had two choices. He'd go with a bomb thrower, somebody. Remember, he wouldn't rule out appointing Michael Gableman,
that's
to
correct.
The commission, which yeah. I think we all know is kind of a bluff.
Right.
But he could have gone that bomb thrower route, which would have made the hard right crowd happy, right? Because they're the ones who are screaming about 2020 and there's something off about the election. Or he goes with Don Millis, who's somebody who's a steady hand, who actually will make the commission work. If Robin had gone with that bomb thrower kind of approach, then you're talking about somebody who would probably have a lot of 3-3 votes, the commission not working. It doesn't work that great right now, quite honestly, according to people I talked to. But it would have been even worse. So Millis is somebody who will find a way to get things done. And as one Republican told me, he knows the difference between interpreting the law and writing the law. Republicans hate it when agencies write the law. If he can find a way to interpret the law and keep Dems working with him, great. Now, it may not all be smooth for him. Bob Spindell made a point of not voting for Don Millis for chair. Remember, Bob put his name out there, couldn't get a second for the nomination, so he didn't even get a vote by the commission. When Millis came up, Spindell voted no. Now, prior to the hearing, I talked to Bob about him wanting to run, and he pointed out that Millis had pushed forward the motion in 2016 to allow clerks to fill in missing information absentee ballot envelopes. This has become, you know, it was unanimous back then. It
back
was
then.
Proposed
yes.
by a Republican, seconded by a Republican, unanimous vote. It's become a source of ire for Republicans because of 2020 and the reliance on absentee balloting. Anyway, Bob made a point of that was an issue for him. And so we'll watch. Watch, see how that dynamic plays out going forward in that commission and how they work together.
And I think we brought this up briefly last week, too, is we don't really know where he stands on other issues. Mm-hmm. Yes, you can go back to his stance in 2016. A lot has changed since then.
Yes.
Also, what does he feel about unmanned drop boxes and other future rules when it comes to elections? We know any day now, the state Supreme Court will be ruling whether or not unmanned drop boxes can be used in the November election. So that's something we're still keeping an eye on. Mix this week, personal income.
So it's rising, which is great.
Oh, yeah.
It's rising.
I was like, this
no,
is
no,
mixed chair.
No, it's rising, but not as much as at the federal level.
Right.
National average. And also, because of inflation, is taking a chunk out of your raise. So, yeah, you're getting more money, but you're not getting it's not as effective as it used to be. Another thing that happened this week was DWD, Department of Workforce Development, put out new numbers that labor participation is going up in Wisconsin, more people in the workforce. Our unemployment rate actually ticked up a little bit because there were more people going into the workforce than jobs added. So they're actually kind of both good things because we have an issue with the number of people who are available to work in Wisconsin, which lots of folks do. Our labor participation rate peaked in 1997, around 75%. We're now around 66 and change, which is still above the national average. Part of it's demographics, though. I know I'm getting deep in the weeds here, but bear with me. As people get older, they're less likely to work because once you like age 55, studies show you're more likely to retire early, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who's hitting age 55 right now? Baby boomers. In fact, they began hitting that age in 2001, roughly 2000, which is just when the labor participation rate in Wisconsin began to decline. So as we're aging and boomers are getting older, there are less folks who are actively working from age 16 and up looking for jobs, right? Because they want to retire. That's what I want to do when I'm 65,
right?
70. The challenge for employers is how do you find more people to come back in the workforce?
Right.
There are all kinds of people looking for like part-time works. Can they find a retiree to work part-time, things like that?
Well, that's what's happening right now, too, across America. A lot of people with inflation right now, high gas prices, they plan for retirement, but there's 65-year-old, 70-year-olds. I'm seeing them at the grocery store now. Yep. I actually talked to a woman last week at Trader Joe's, and I've been actually trying to find someone to talk to about this story because it's just kind of a changing demographic that we're seeing. And she said, I had to come back. I was retired for 3 years. I enjoyed it, but I don't really have too many options. She lives alone and had to get some side work. So God bless her. Falling this week is John Tate, another thing that we talked about last week, but we covered a lot of news last week. He's fallen.
More the question is John Tate the proverbial sacrificial lamb in politics, or is he going to actually like move this off the table, right? So for Evers, we've talked before, Governor Evers is stuck between his belief in trying to reduce the prison population, voters in the middle who want to be safe, and kind of a social justice wing of the Democratic Party. Tate resigning is obviously the fallout of this initial decision to release somebody who had stabbed his wife to death in 1997, or convicted him in 97, served 25 years of an 80-year sentence, and was set to be released. That was reversed. Does him resigning take it off the table? Now, Republicans say, no, there's going to be an issue there no matter what, because there's that. There's crime in Kenosha with the violent protests in 2020. We have a rise in violent crime in Wisconsin, period. This is going to be something hung around Evers' neck. Or some Democrats, look, the governor took action, so this is not what I want. It's going to take care of it. I don't know if it's going to take care of it. One thing that's kind of backstory of all this is, in Wisconsin in 1999, I think it was, we passed truth in sentencing, which basically means if you're sentenced to 25 years, you serve 25 years. When this guy who killed his wife and was convicted in 97 was sent to prison, they wanted you to serve 25 years, they gave you 80. Because you had the option to earn early release. It was a different scenario. But for Evers to have to go back and say, look, you know, this guy served his time. Yes, he went to, like, release him, but I went and said, no, don't do it. Then he said, he's explaining.
All right.
When you're explaining, you're losing. That issue can become particularly potent politically if the family, for example, is irritated enough they want to be in a TV ad.
I was just going to say that. You literally just took the words out of my mouth. We could well see that happen.
The other thing people brought to me is, you know, Evers has pardoned more than 500 people now, I think it is, record. If any of those guys go back and do something between now and the election, that is bad. These are the dangers for Evers on crime. That's why I want to bring this back up. The dangers for Evers on crime between the pardons, people leaving early, this issue with Tate. So again, is Tate sacrificial lamb? Does he take it off the table? Or is it just one piece of the story that's going to play out until November?
Right, and Evers, like you said, is going to have to explain all of this. Meanwhile, this week he was out in the Milwaukee neighborhood touting his crime prevention package, trying to, you know, show him in a different light. But these are questions that are not going to go away, and Republicans are really going to drive it home heading into the midterms and into the fall.
Yep.
All right, that will do it for this week. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Have a good weekend.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrell Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.